Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody is doing well on this. It's not as hot today. I mean, we had a little bit of a reprieve, few clouds, temperatures only in the low 90s. I've become so much more mechanically inclined, not inclined, but willing to try some things. I pulled the transmission on my self-propelled lawnmower today.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Not on the robot.
No.
Yeah, you're not.
I'm not messing with Husky. Husky was out doing work.
You're not touching while I'm doing the circuitry. On
no,
Husky.
My
folks spot up in the Dadeville area, Dadeville adjacent mm-hmm. area. They've got a pretty serious backyard going.
Uh huh.
You know, on an incline and
wow,
everything.
That, yeah.
And I'm telling pops like the little Husky can
handle it.
Can handle
no,
it.
No question about it.
I mean, so it's that's something that he's, you know, on the list of things that could be happening for that spot. I know someone who will give it a ringing endorsement.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, it is less expensive than a good riding mower would be. And you don't have to do it. It does it for you. So yeah. I was doing a little of that, and I realized, yeah, it's hot, but it's not nearly as bad as it had been the last few days. So welcome in here on the Tuesday Drive. No Andy Burcham today. Saw Andy over at the press conferences for Auburn's new women's tennis and softball coaches today. You know, if we've got a chance, we may let you hear some of the some of those press conferences. Andy said he has meetings scheduled for all this afternoon, so he wasn't going to be able to get with us today. And then next week is it seems like everybody's getting out next week. I heard Jacob saying he's out next Thursday and Friday. I'd already mentioned I'm out next Wednesday through Friday. Andy said he's gone next week. Jason said he's out next week. We'll see who's left by the end of next week. But we're both here today, and tomorrow, I believe. I'm headed to Birmingham. I just got notification of something as we were coming on the air. I just got notification of a scheduled medical appointment on Thursday. Not going to be able to make that one because we will be headed to Rick Woodfield. Matt and I are heading to Rick Woodfield to watch the Giants and the Cardinals on Thursday, and then you're headed up to Kentucky for a family get together. Right?
Yeah, I'm going to go see extended family with my dad this weekend up in Kentucky, and should be excited for, you know, exciting stuff. I've actually never been to Lexington, Bill. In my SEC travels, I will check that list. I will check that city off the list of places I've been. I've never
been to Lexington in the summer, or as I've been.
You've been to Rupp for games?
I've been to Rupp. I have been to what's the Kentucky
Kroger.
Football stadium?
Kroger Field.
It didn't used to be.
It wasn't
right.
Kroger Field,
right.
Yeah.
But been there and seen the bluegrass and everything. It's been either fall, winter, or spring when I've been to Lexington. I've been there for baseball, basketball, and football. Haven't been there in the summer, So yeah, that should be a nice trip.
That's a road game that I know some people are going to take this
year.
We're
planning on that one this year.
Oh yeah, you're taking the
The wife. She's never been. So she'd like to go.
Should be fun. Auburn playing in Lexington this year. One of the four SEC road games scheduled. And yeah, I'm going to go check the city out this weekend. Ferguson has been to Lexington a couple of times, he's told me about a spot or two to check out when I'm up there. So looking forward to it. And yeah, the thing you're checking out on Thursday, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but just such a cool event for Major League Baseball to schedule a regular season game between two teams at the at Rickwood Field in Birmingham. A salute to Willie Mays, a salute to Birmingham's baseball history, a salute to the Negro Leagues.
Like, right.
It's all encompassing in what they're doing on Thursday and tonight.
Yeah, minor league game tonight,
which I believe is on. I want to say MLB Network has it, but I could have that wrong.
Man, probably do.
But it's Birmingham and Montgomery tonight. Right. The Biscuits and the Barons will be squaring off at Rickwood Field, and that should be a lot of fun too. You know, and the rivalry between those two teams is going to get a little bit more interesting next season when the Mississippi affiliate moves to Columbus. The Braves moving they're moving the Mississippi Braves to Columbus. The AA affiliate of the Braves will play just down the road. We were Ferguson and I were talking at the Braves game on Sunday. There has not been any sort of announcement about a mascot or a nickname or anything like that. Some folks think they might keep the Braves, although I think they probably are missing out on merchandising opportunities.
Probably are. They have sort of liked keeping their higher level farm teams called the Braves, but I mean, we'll see.
I think just the Mississippi team now. I think some of the other teams have changed their names in recent seasons. So the Mississippi Braves are the holdout there. Ferguson's idea, Bill, was the I think his is a little better than mine, so I'll give you mine first. I said go with the cobbler, so the Columbus cobbler, and you could say that's like peach cobbler, or it could just be a guy fixing shoes, right? Like you could pick either one, but I figure with the Montgomery Biscuits, you know, having the Columbus peach cobbler, yeah, you know, you could have an obvious rivalry there. Ferguson's idea was the Columbus kudzu. And he wanted to have a big kudzu vine with arms and legs. So no announcement from anyone about that. But you got any ideas, Bill, as far as what they could, the Columbus Georgia should call its Braves affiliate? When you can give it some thought if you want someone maybe someone with an idea right now. But we'll okay. We'll hear from Bill. We'll hear from Bill shortly. But yeah, that's exciting news. You know, as regionally, you know, more baseball in the area, and of course the big event going on at Rickwood Field this week with tonight's game, Biscuits and the Barons, and then Thursday the Giants taking on the Cardinals should be and that one's on Fox, and that's going to be really cool. A lot of renovation performed at the stadium in advance of this nationally televised event. It was revealed yesterday. Willie Mays announced that he's not going to be able to attend. He's going to stay home in the Bay Area, California, and watch it. 93 years old, and so it's a little bit unfortunate that Willie Mays can't go in person. But he's still going to be the subject of a lot of tributes in an event like that. And so yeah, I hope folks check that out. Very cool that Bill is going to be able to go in person with his son Matt to see the event at Rickwood. So the Celtics NBA season is over. The Boston Celtics just quietly dominating not just the regular season and not just the Eastern Conference playoffs, but the playoffs in general. A fitting end, you know, in an era where people talk about teams that get hot at the right time, and you don't necessarily see the team that dominated the regular season cap that off with a championship in the postseason. You know, the best team throughout the regular season this year in the NBA was the Boston Celtics, and they were the best team in the playoffs as well. A near perfect team. Brad Stevens assembled a great roster. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. I mean, at the top of it, but you know, you keep going down. How about Al Horford? Right, this deep in the NBA career, getting a championship. I remember seeing Al Horford at Beard Eves Coliseum with the defending national champion Florida Gators back in, what would that have been, below 07?
That sounds
the
right.
The second year. That's one of the great teams I've ever seen in my life, right? Like, you could say Al Horford, and Al Horford was a big part of it, but that's one of the great starting fives college basketball. I mean, they won the championship 2 years in a row. The Donovan Gators with Al Horford, Joakim Noah, who's the swingman, Brewer. Yeah, the shooting, yeah, the point guard, like the whole thing. Like, it was they were a really, really tough matchup, and now Al Horford consistently, and he wasn't a 3-point shooter back then. Al Horford was just someone, like, he was a fierce rim protector, really skilled around the basket, and he's evolved his game and become a really dangerous sort of modern stretch four, stretch five for the NBA champions. And so it's a I'm not in the rivalry sense, Bill. I rarely veer towards the Celtics. You know what I mean? I was more of a Lakers guy, and
oh, no, yes. I've got to admit, I was too.
Yeah, so. I liked the Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce team because there were veterans on that team I really liked. This group is just, it's tough to. Tough to dislike too much about this organization, from the GM to the coach to the players they've assembled here. Just an excellent roster that caps off a dominant season with a championship.
Yeah, no question. Sorry about that. But
good news.
But the scheduling concern that I had for Thursday, that's been taken care of.
I think that
was just a follow-up and them saying, wow, we didn't know we'd be able to get you in that quickly. And it's like, well, I'm not going to be able to make it on Thursday.
I speak for the listeners when I say, like, I mean, maybe you can put the phone on silent. I don't know. But when the doctor calls, you can go ahead and answer
it.
Like, that's fine.
As a matter of fact, I meant to have it silenced, but I'm glad that I was able to answer it.
Bill, if your doctor calls during the show, like, take the call. Like,
I had the regular visit today. So when you see something after you've had a regular visit, it's like, oh,
I'm with you.
Yeah, I better answer that.
Anyways, So it's.
So back to. I think we could have. You know, we could ask our listeners to come up with some nicknames. Because back in the day, all right, way back in the day, I remember when Golden Park was home to the Astros AA farm team, but they were just the Columbus Astros, I believe. Then they've been the one that was a good one. I thought was it before the Rays moved their AA team to Montgomery? Weren't they the Catfish? I believe they were the Columbus Catfish.
I like Columbus Catfish.
That's not bad. And then they were the Red Sticks. That sounds like they ought to be in Baton Rouge.
Catfish can be a placeholder until you think of something you like more.
What was yours again? Yours was the Cobbler.
I want the Clobber and Cobs, baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I like Clobberer better than Cobbler. I mean, nah. As, you know,
the Clobbers,
yeah,
the Columbus Clobbers. Okay, all right, we can work on it.
All right, whatever. But you can help us out there again. Anything on your mind, sports wise and otherwise, and you can get through by calling the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for the Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Again, all that presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And let's get to the Drive Hotline and go ahead and welcome in our first caller. Hey, who have we got on the line?
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, it's Uncle Ollie.
Hello. Hey, hello, Uncle Ollie.
Hey, man. Hey, actually, it was the Columbus Mudcats.
Mudcats. There you go.
Yep. They were the Mudcats. You'll enjoy
which is a cooler way of describing catfish. So, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it does sound better. But they were the Mudcats. I'm not sure what their affiliation was. That one you might know. I don't know. I just know they were the Mudcats.
This was, all right, was that back when they were the Astros farm team? I was trying to think. when I went over and watched when there was a Major League Baseball had a strike and Yogi Berra was going around with the Yankees minor league teams, went over there and thought it'd be cool to go over there and watch. They had a game against the double A team and went over there, and Yogi was not the nicest guy.
And Bill,
had seats right by the dugout.
You know, I'm a proponent of field trip weekend in baseball. I think every major league team should have a weekend where they either play at their triple A affiliate or their double A affiliate, and just bring the show to a town that doesn't always get major league baseball.
So, Bill.
Yeah.
Shifting gears a little bit here to music. So today, well, I signed up a couple of weeks ago for advanced tickets to see the Eagles at the Sphere in Vegas.
Yeah, I saw that. That's what we were talking about that a few days ago when that came out.
Yeah.
Golly, yeah. What did you have to put another mortgage on your house?
Here's the thing. So it tells me, okay, for the date that I wanted, which obviously being an Auburn guy, I picked a date that Auburn is a bye week.
That's the weekend of October the 12th. I know exactly that
date. Well, actually, it's October the 19th.
Ooh, I don't know that Auburn's got an open date on the 19th. They may be away. I think Auburn's on the road on the 19th.
But so the 19th was a Saturday. So so it tells me, you know, at 2:00 my time to I can get advanced tickets. Literally at 2:03 I get in. I have 46,000 people ahead of me.
Oh God. Yep, I've done that kind of thing.
So I just threw my hands up. I actually waited it out, and an hour and 20 minutes later, I got in.
Wow.
And, of course, everything was gone.
Oh, yeah.
Except for the crappy stuff.
How much does the Sphere hold? Dan, do you know?
Ooh, I should know. For a concert, I believe the Sphere can hold 2,500 to 5,000, but that might be
all?
Low.
Wow.
That might be low. But I, for some reason, I thought it was single digit thousand.
Yeah, the problem is though, if you get tickets in the Sphere, if you get anything like in the 100 section, you have an overhang, so you really can't see the Sphere.
Hmm.
So everybody grabs all the good stuff. So
right.
The only thing that was left was the bad stuff, which was still going for $500-$600 a ticket.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway,
hey, you got to try though. You got to try. I've done that a couple of times and come up just short as well. But I heard some stories that were similar to that from my sons talking about trying to get tickets to Rickwood on Thursday night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard that. I was listening to another sports show earlier today, and that they couldn't get tickets. And they're in Birmingham. So, yeah, it sold out in a hurry. So, but anyway, you guys have a great afternoon.
Yeah, well, keep trying. That's pretty cool stuff, Uncle Lolly. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, man.
All right, 334. Yeah, it was indeed the Mudcats from 1969 to 1990. The Mudcats, double A. So they changed affiliations. I didn't realize they'd been affiliated. They've been affiliated with a few teams over there. Good to know that they're going back to double A in Columbus. They were a White Sox affiliate, then Astros for a long time, and now going to be the Braves. That makes perfect sense to bring them closer to home, especially now that you see so many players moving, making that jump from double A to the majors. I mean, good to have them, you know, just a little over an hour away.
I think the Sphere might be closer to 15,000 and how many you can hold, maybe 15 to 20,000 for a concert experience. Yet you got with the Dead and Company right now, the John Mayer and the Grateful Dead group performing at the Sphere, and then you've the Eagles, right, coming
mm-hmm,
up
right.
During football season.
Yeah, so that is that would be really cool.
Eagles at the Sphere is probably going to be a pretty hot ticket, I imagine.
Well, like Uncle Lolly said, he tried to get in right when it opened, and there were 46,000 people in the queue ahead of him. Yeah. So, yeah. 334-321-1390. We're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive. Love for you to join us. Come on in.
Since 1997,
and you communicate with your staff and you communicate with Dr. Roberts, our president here at Auburn, and he says, tell me about these folks.
Now, I didn't realize, yes, A.D. John Cohen, who we had on the air, and I saw him today and thanked him for that, gave the introduction. So this is John Cohen that you're hearing before we get to hear Chris and Kate Malvo.
Type guy, and he's one of the best hitting guys in the country, and very, very thoughtful and intellectual, and he can really, really teach the game. And he said, well, tell me about Kate. And I thought about it, she's got some Bruce Pearl in her. And I know Bruce is actually here. She's never met a stranger. She can really recruit, and every opportunity she has individually with fans, with recruits, with the person walking down the street, she makes the most of it. Really incredible communication skills. Chris has head coaching experience. Kate has outstanding recruiting evaluation experience and is a great teacher of the catching position. And I know from experience in softball and baseball that catching, teaching ability is incredibly important to future success. Chris is one of the most brilliant offensive minds in collegiate softball, and everybody who knows the game will tell you that. Kate was a former standout player at Bradley University. These two have combined for 27 years of coaching experience. The Malvos have combined for 14 different championships that they've been a part of. They've combined for 10-plus NCAA postseason appearances. They've combined to help produce 14 softball All-Americans. They're part of unprecedented success at the University of Tennessee, including SEC titles, SEC tournament titles, and trips to Oklahoma City. The synergy of these two coaches is something that jumps off the page at you. I know future recruits and the members of the Auburn softball team are going to feel that. It's clear that future and current student athletes feel that Chris and Kate are among the best player development coaches available in the country. And they are parents to Gabe and to Ellie. And by the way, you guys have been stars. You've been quiet this whole time. So well done. My two would have never been that quiet at your age. So please welcome the fourth and fifth head coaches in Auburn history, Auburn softball history, Kate and Chris Malvo.
You know, it's not too often that Kate lets me go first. I'm gonna enjoy this moment. You'll see when she gets up here how passionate she is. I'd like to thank John. Thank you for this opportunity. We are so pumped to be here. War freaking Eagle, man. Let's do this. There's been, moments, in reflection, whenever we've had 5 minutes, off to the side, if we're not on the phone or recruiting, on the road, and the amount of times that we've sat here and thought, like, we're running this Auburn softball program. What an amazing honor. First, I'd like to go through and thank some amazing people, amazing influences in our lives. First, I'd like to thank God for this opportunity. Only you can make this possible. Before I move on, my family, John just talked about having our family here. That was a big part of our decision, John wanting this to be family. My two kids, Gabe and Ellie, they've been soldiers along this ride, and so thankful for you guys. Love you guys so much and so proud of you. Kate, you know, she's basically the yin to my yang, right? We hear that a lot in people that are around us, and they're like, oh my God, she's this and you're this, and it's perfect. You know, Kate has been, you know, she's been by my side for at least 10 years, and then but 10 plus. You know, she's such a backbone to our family. Very good at holding me accountable and making sure that I'm doing the things I'm supposed to be doing and when I'm doing them. But thank you so much for being an amazing wife. I've loved this journey and excited for this new stage to be able to share this with you. So appreciative of you. Thank you. Former players, again, would not be standing here if we didn't have some great players along the way. I'm a big journey person. I love going on the journey with people, being in the trenches, you know, being in the cages on the field, in the dugout. I love that journey and being on a team and being able to do it with people. Been so fortunate to be around some amazing players over the years. You know, we wouldn't be here without them. The trusting, wanting to work together, the camaraderie. You know, hopefully I've made some form of impact on their lives that's remotely comparable to the ones they've made on mine. So very appreciative of all the former players. Also, people that have believed in me on this journey. You know, I started off in college softball at A&M when I was a student under Coach Evans. She's a sole person that really got me into college softball. So fortunate for that. You know, along the way, my first college job, Scott Eastman at McNeese, went to UL with the Low Tees, who very instrumental in kind of showing a blueprint of how a husband and wife would do this. Very amazing program. Amy Hayes, Megan Smith, Lewis Anderson at Mizzou gave me the first opportunity to be in the SEC and totally had my eyes wide open of what this amazing league is like. And, you know, really had a tremendous learning opportunity there. Very fortunate for the sacrifices that she's made for our family. Karen Weekly took a chance on us. Her husband Ralph retired, big shoes to fill right there, and she trusted us. Very appreciative of our friendship and our mentorship, and we look forward to continuing that relationship down the road. You know, I'm gonna try to keep this short because I know there's gonna be a lot of questions. Auburn is such an amazing community, great people. We were here a couple times this year. I've been here before. Everyone is so welcoming, so hospitable. It's just amazing to be around these people that love living here. They love Auburn. You know, the amount of people that have come out of the woodworks that we didn't even know who had Auburn ties over the years is just amazing, this network. The thirst for softball to continue to grow, you know, it's been a national powerhouse. It's been runner-up in the World Series. That's what we want to get to. But we are so fortunate to be here in such an incredibly special place. War Eagle.
I don't think very often you get to hear from two head coaches at once. This is probably a new thing, but we're super grateful. And good morning, and War Eagle. I'm going to try and not repeat what Chris said, but I mean, I think he did a fantastic job of showing just how excited we are to be here and all the tradition and vision ultimately that we're looking forward to building here at Auburn. I think we're incredibly honored and humbled to usher in the new era of Auburn softball. Doesn't go without a lot of work that was laid prior to us. We're so grateful, first and foremost, like Chris said, to God, for all the struggles and the successes that we've had. We know we wouldn't be here without having the opportunities that he's put in front of us. Sorry, you'll hear me. I talk a lot, so this voice doesn't go away. A big thank you to John Cohen and his staff. They did a fantastic job of making this feel like home from the very start. They're incredible people. They've sat in our seats. They know what it takes to win. And we're just so grateful that they saw in us what the vision that we have for this program and where we can take it. Another big shout out to Casey Page, specifically our sport admin. Man, she's been boots on the ground with us from the minute we started in more ways than she probably knows. And so we're just beyond grateful for that. To Ralph and Karen Weekly specifically, like Chris said, they gave us a shot to work together and really do this thing. And they showed us, they gave us the blueprint that husband and wives can do it. They are friends, they are family, and we are just beyond grateful for the experience that they gave us and our kids. For every coach that I ever played for, or for every coach that I ever worked with, you have impacted my life in such a way that I can only hope that I make the same impact for the young ladies that we're going to work with here at Auburn. For every player that we've ever coached, for every player that has ever touched this Auburn softball program, we appreciate you, and we are so grateful for the faith that you've had in us, for the love that you've given to your programs and our families, and for the trust to guide you. Thank you for letting us be part of your journey. To my family and to Chris's family, they have driven so many miles to help make this happen. Obviously, we have two little ones. And so it sometimes is an interesting puzzle, but we wouldn't have it any other way. And we are beyond grateful for the sacrifices that they have made to help us do what we do. To Gabe and Ellie, I know Chris touched on it, but you're rock stars. And you have sacrificed so much for mom and dad to be able to do this. But we know how cool it is too. And they're going to be a big part of it. Lastly, to Chris. Chris is my rock. Like, I'm a spitfire, don't get me wrong, but whenever things get hard or whenever I need to bounce ideas, he's the one I go to. He's the first one when I'm excited about something. I'll run up to him and I'm like, the catchers did this. He goes, I know nothing about that, but let's talk about it. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. But I think the flip side of that is it would be so easy. Chris is one of the best at what he does. And it would be so easy for him to want to take his own route and go, but he sees me for who I am as a person and as a coach, and he has pushed me to be better every step of the way, and he wants me to be my own person. Not everybody would do that. And so I think that just speaks to his character and who he is. I am so grateful that we get to do this together. Beyond grateful. I love you. That was a lot. We're going to keep going. Listen, we know where this program has been. I mean, you look at it, there's 18 NCAA postseason runs, 10 of which have come straight down the stretch. Two amazing Women's College World Series runs. You've got two SEC championships underneath our belts. A bunch of All-Americans. Pitchers of the year. Freshmen of the year. I mean, you look at the players that have left their mark on this program, from your Maddie Pentas here as of late, your Casey Coopers, your Emily Carasonis, your Holly Currys. They are what laid the foundation for us to come in and do what we're going to do here at this place. And I don't think you can go where you're going without knowing where you've been. So we're incredibly grateful for what Auburn softball has done, for what Mickey Dean and his staff has done to set us up for amazing success moving forward. We're most excited to get boots on the ground. If you know anything about us, we're big developers. That we want to get our hands dirty and get to work. I think the players are learning that real fast just in our conversations with them. But we're going to develop elite level talent, and we're going to ensure that ultimately that when they leave this place, they're going to tap into every single bit of their athletic experience, but leave here better people for the lives that they're going to touch from here on out, including the ones that they're going to touch in this community on a daily basis. Again, we're not afraid to work. We've proven that we can build, and we can build fast. And man, we're going to chase championships. That's what we're going to do here. And that's what we expect out of our players. You're going to work hard. You're going to outwork everybody. And you're going to demand nothing but the best from everybody around you. And we are just beyond excited for this new era to kick it off. And we want this community. We want the alumni. We want the donors. We want the fans. We want you to be part of it because you are part of the family. That matters to us. So come out, be a part of it. We're going to find standing room if we need to. And War Eagle.
That is Kate Malvo. You heard her. I mean, you can tell she's pretty energetic. I don't know if, how much her voice is going to, has been affected or going to improve.
You know what? And I,
man,
yeah.
She is a lot of energy. And then husband Chris, as they talked. If we get a chance, we'll let you hear some of the Q&A. There's some good answers from them in the Q&A as well. But wanted to let you hear some of their comments today at their introductory press conference with the media.
I'm really impressed with both of them. I do hate it for her that her voice wasn't in tip-top shape for today's press conference, but she powered
through. Slow her down a bit.
Yeah, it didn't slow her down, and she powered through, and I thought they came across really well. So yeah, excited to see what Team Malvo can do at the helm for Auburn softball.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to our next break. Love for you to join in again, 334-321-1390, as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive.
Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And again, you can join us by either calling or texting. Again, no Andy Burcham today, but Jake Crane should be joining us at the bottom of hour number two. So we'll talk to him. You want to run? You want to hear some of the Q&A?
Yeah, you were there in attendance, and I know Jacob asked a question as well. Our colleague from on the line was there at the press conference, and our old pal Riley Hubbard was there. You were saying for the
well, he was helping direct the traffic. For the media, there was a good crowd of alums and just folks. Some of the folks that could make it from the athletic department were in there as well.
Yeah, it's a big moment for the softball program. Absolutely. And yeah, I'd love to hear the questions from the for the Malvos.
All right, so we'll continue because Q&A should be coming up next.
Yeah, that applause is for us and the job that we did just setting that segment up.
Yeah, right now they were individually behind a podium. Now they're moving up to the table where both of them can be seated and take questions.
Yeah, now everybody's sitting down after the standing ovation that we just received.
Here we go. There. Yeah, she's just
Hey guys, Adam Cole with the Opelika Auburn News. You both touched on it, but I did want to ask, just like what do the logistics of being co-head coaches kind of look like to you guys? How do you, I guess, kind of separate those things, so to speak, amongst yourselves?
Well, I think the easiest way to answer that, like, Chris is a brilliant mind. He's a brilliant mind, and I think obviously when you go over to take a head coaching job, everybody's like, can you continue to be in the weeds the way that he wants to be in the weeds to coach the offense? I mean, that's what his claim to fame is building offenses. I think the best part about the head coaching gig is that I've sat in a lot of the rooms and a lot of the different roles that I've been a part of to have set me up for success to help be a head coach. So I'm going to hopefully be able to take some of that responsibility that goes on to one person off so that he can stay in that offensive role, because we all know that sometimes you have to give a little bit in these roles to be able to manage an entire team and not just an offense. So I think with that being said, we live in the same household, so things are going to get talked about, let's be real. A lot. But to that point, I think the reason why this is going to work really well, Chris hit on it, what he is may not be my strength. What my strengths may not be his. So you get the best. Every head coach is going to have flaws, every single one of them. You don't have those flaws because you get both. And I think that's what makes this really unique. So we'll divide the duties, but we're going to make sure that he can be in the cages to help run this offense.
To either one of you, the roster you inherit and the recruits, how are you balancing that, and do you expect everybody that's still here to be back?
Obviously we've got to make a jump. You know, we've got to climb the ranks. Sooner than later, and most of the people, everyone that's still here, we're planning on coming back. We are involved in the portal. Only for, certain people that have been proven, or we know, man, if they can put this and this together, they're going to help us make that jump sooner than later. Kind of what we're looking for, when we go recruiting, obviously you want athletes, right? What we want to do with the culture here, is probably a little bit step further past that, right? We want good work ethic, you know, people that are competitive. They want to get better. They want to get in there and understand what it's like to, hey, you know, I'm figuring this out. I'm going to stay here until I know I have this down. You know, we're going to push ourselves in the weight room. We're going to pursue excellence in every aspect of what a program does, in the classroom, on the field, in the weight room. You know, we want this culture to take a step forward. You know, let's get a little bit more where, you know, the players that are here are competitive and understand that work ethic, you know, but also sometimes to make it a little bit easier, we also want to bring others in that may help us, like, set that example, and we can see that firsthand. We want to be able to make that jump forward as soon as possible, and we want to make sure we have the right people here. We've had conversations with players here in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. You know, when we had a Zoom the day of when everything was announced. A couple days later, we were out on Toomer's Corner, had a little ice cream with about 8 or 9 that were in town. You know, started kind of like meet in person then, and really they can kind of start getting a feel for our personalities. You know, had some people that weren't able to be there, either had some phone calls later on, they're maybe helping a travel team in a tournament that we were at. So, you know, been able to have some conversations there of, you know, what's going to be expected, you know, moving forward. We feel like the players that are here have been all about it, and they're excited. You know, they want to take a step forward. You know, they want to work. They want to win. They want to be competitive, and that's our goal. You know, at the end of the day, if you totally, you know, cut a roster, you know, you don't know if you're cutting the right or wrong, you know, people. That, but if they want that and they want to get in and go, then let's go. But we've gotten some good feedback. You know, it sounds like, you know, they want this and we want this too. And so let's do it.
Bill Cameron, ESPN 106.7. You mentioned it a little while ago, but how important was it, or did you guys let any possible suitors know that you needed to be brought in as a team? And then a little follow-up on that, just talk about the difference in being the head coach and co-head coaches. How does it work during the ball games? I understand, you know, you talk about things in the dugout, but something happens on the field. Who runs out?
That's a good question.
No, I think you want to go.
Go ahead.
No, I think people all the time want to say why it won't work instead of why it will. And I think that there's been some great people in this game that have shown how they can do it. I think ultimately we've created a staff that is going to maximize what we're already building. From a head coaching standpoint, obviously Chris can speak to being a head coach on his own. But I think whenever you're talking about on-field responsibilities, like a lot of the conversations that have been had before, those conversations on decision-making and what's going to happen, those have been discussed well before the game. Chris has proven that he can manage an offense and a roster. He's done that already as a head coach. I think whenever it comes to running a team, there will be voices that echo the same message. My message is Chris's message. Our assistants will then also echo that same message. If you have one message coming from the head coach and it's not coming from me or another assistant, we're all doing ourselves a disservice to those kids. Right? That's where division comes. I actually think the co-head coaching thing is perfect because decisions will be made jointly. Okay, obviously there will be times that he's gonna have to make decisions without consulting me, and I'll talk to him about those at home, okay? And that is fine. I'll get over it, okay? And vice versa. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, if with one head coach, there are decisions that have to be made in the moment and go. We do what we can at the best moment based on what that is. Chris will be the speaking acting head coach. He will be the speaking head coach when it comes to dealing with umpires and whatnot. That will most likely happen. Now listen, as we get going, he may want to be in the dugout more. If that's the case, I'm not afraid to go. I've been around this game plenty. I've been in the SEC plenty. I can do that. I think that's the cool thing is that we've both done it. So I think it'll be fun. I think we're going to work through what that's going to look like more as we get going now that we have our staff in place. But look at him. He's like, we're going to talk about that. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, he's got the head coaching experience in that regard, but don't count me out.
That is Kate and Chris Malvo. Those are the team Malvo as they met with the media. They had a few more questions and answers. I just thought that was a fun one, but it was a very, very enlightening and interesting answer. We'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Stick with us on the Tuesday Drive.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And we'd love for you to be a part of the show here in hour number two of the drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can be a part of the show by either calling the Drive hotline, which is sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Yep, hour number one, let's see, we let you hear the introductory press conference with the media from Team Malvo, Auburn's new softball co-head coaches.
Do you want to make a note, Drew, that audio is not going to be on the podcast, right? That's how it works when we run. Oh, and we'll be okay. We are okay. We fixed that. Okay, cool.
Oh, so, good. Good, because that had been a problem.
All right, forget I said anything then. So hopefully, folks in the podcast enjoyed hearing from Team Malvo in hour number one.
Yep, we have Jake Crane will be joining us at the bottom of this hour. In the meantime, we're wide open. Anything you'd like to talk about? I know Dan mentioned when I had to take a quick call a little earlier, the Celtics wrapping up the NBA championship last night and doing it in style after an ugly game four, which at least gave the Mavs a win in the series. But the Celtics back, and yeah, I had not realized it had been as long a drought.
Just the second championship for the Celtics since Larry Bird retired in the early 90s. They won the 2008.
Is that 18 or 19 now?
18 total. They won their 18th championship to stand alone there. But the 2024 NBA Finals won by the Boston Celtics in five games they really set the tone, building a 29-point lead in the first game of the finals. I mean, you got the sense that when these two teams were playing, unless Dallas was playing extremely well, the Celtics were a cut above the Dallas Mavericks. And look, in Dallas, there's probably something to the idea that Dallas ran out of gas a little bit, working as hard as they did to get through the Western Conference final, Western Conference playoffs, extremely competitive. Boston was able to put away their Eastern Conference foes in four games or five games. The Celtics went, what? It was like they only lose one or two games in the Eastern Conference Finals before getting to the finals. The Celtics went through wars including the Timberwolves there in the Western Conference Finals. So yeah, I just think there was maybe a different team from the Western Conference would have given Boston more of a challenge. Minnesota or Denver, the defending champions. I don't know, but instead, we'll never know. We just know that Boston, Dallas is the team that got there, and Boston soundly beat them in this series to claim a championship. And yeah, as successful as the Celtics have been, Bill, over history, you know, 18 championships in total. A lot of those were before 1990, you know, the championships they won in the Red Auerbach era, and of course, you know, the multiple championships won in the 80s with Larry Bird. Just the second title for Boston for the Celtics since Larry Bird retired. They won in the early 2000s, and actually it's the first, I believe, the first championship for any Boston team since the Patriots won the Super Bowl with Brady,
yeah.
Maybe like it,
yeah,
that, I think you're right. Your last, I mean, so it's mm-hmm. been 4 or 5 years since anyone in that area has won any professional sport has won in the area. So it's a celebratory time for one of the storied franchises in American professional sports.
Yeah. So congratulations to the Celtics for that. Now let's see. We've got. I mean, it's pretty much baseball, golf, racing. There's not I'm trying to think of what else really.
You got the NBA draft next week, which is right. Not necessarily, I mean,
I'm just thinking of games.
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of folks, and I know it's not your particular flavor,
the
Bill.
Olympics before too.
Well, a lot of folks watching these WNBA games too. I mean, the ratings for the Caitlin Clark Angel Reese game over the weekend, the Fever and the Sky on Sunday, CBS announced. Did you see this? CBS earlier today.
No, I didn't see.
Announcing that the game on Sunday between the Fever and the Sky, which they aired on CBS, the most watched WNBA game in 23 years, featuring
that doesn't surprise me.
Featuring Caitlin Clark of the Fever and Angel Reese
of
the Sky.
What was the event 23 years ago? I would have thought it may have been the most watched ever.
I wonder. Yeah, I you know what? I cannot tell you off the top of my head what.
Usually they would say since some event.
Yeah, I wonder what the significance was of the game 23 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll see if I can find that out. But the
2001.
The contest the contest on Sunday averaged about just over 2 million viewers. A comparable game window last season featured a game between the Phoenix Mercury and the New York Liberty. The game between the Fever and the Sky had a 225% increase year over year from that game last season. Caitlin Clark scored 23 points in the victory. It was also the most streamed WNBA game ever on Paramount Plus. Now that the streaming partnership is active between the WNBA and that streamer. But yeah, so you're right. It's traditionally a time when, especially the big men's sports in aside from baseball, are in the off season. But a lot of folks paying attention to. We speculated on that too, as to whether or not how the ratings records that Caitlin Clark's teams were breaking in college, the most watched Big Ten games ever,
right.
And the most watched women's college basketball, the women's tournament game ever. This is an amazing stat, Bill. But the Final Four game between Iowa and UConn this mm-hmm. year in the women's NCAA tournament was on a Friday night, and it had 14.5 million viewers to it. The game, what was it, Game Four of Celtics Mavericks had 9.5 million viewers. On this past, that's unthinkable, right?
Yeah, it is.
A women's Final Four game could get 50% more viewers than an NBA Finals game featuring the Boston Celtics when they both aired on Friday nights in their respective windows. But that's what happened this year, and Caitlin Clark has brought some of that ratings magic to the WNBA.
Wow, that is, that's why I was surprised that there was even a game 23 years ago.
I'll see if maybe in the CBS press release they talk about what the significance of the game 21 years ago was.
All right, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about? We were talking a little while ago about the Major League game up at Rickwood Field on Thursday night, and there is a Minor League game tonight. If you have MLB Network, you'll be able to watch the Birmingham Barons and the Montgomery Biscuits. And as Dan mentioned, the Braves moving their Double-A team from Mississippi to Columbus. Nice to see Columbus with a Double-A team. I mean, you're looking at in the state. I mean, you've got you'll have Huntsville. This Mobile still got Pensacola does.
Pensacola's got the Pilots, right? The
The
ice, yeah. uh, the, the, No, that's not it. The Blue Wahoos. The ice pilots.
Yeah, the ice pilots. Wait a minute, that's not the hockey team.
No, it's the Blue Wahoos down in Pensacola. By the way, I hear that ballpark is
awesome. That's a cool ballpark.
I've heard Pensacola's ballpark is really cool. But no, Montgomery's got the you got the biscuits. You've got the pandas.
Trash pandas.
Yeah, you got the trash pandas, and now you've got whatever they decide to call. So the Columbus area team.
I'm surprised. I was looking to see if they had named the team yet, but they. They have not, so we were.
What about like the cobbler? If you combine the shoe one and the pie, right? So you have like maybe it's like a Big Peach who fixes shoes could be the mascot or something, right? Or like and but I think you could
Dan's
launch
trying to cobble together.
Oh, come on, we're having the clobbers, baby. Yeah. I think Justin's kudzu idea is a lot of fun too because it grows on you.
Huh?
It really does. It grows on you. I think they could have some fun out there, and I do think it would be a missed opportunity to go with Braves just because.
I think so too.
You can distinguish yourself.
Minor league sports teams and then your nicknames have always been so cool.
Got to see a lot of the Braves played the Rays on Sunday, and I popped into that game, and I got to see. Quite a few former Biscuits,
yeah.
that had worked their way into the Rays organization. Virtually everyone on that team played in the Biscuits at some point. A lot of former National League familiar faces too on that Rays team. They had Zach Eflin getting the start. My old pal Ahmed Rosario is the starting shortstop down there. So it was cool to see.
You're doing fine with what you got for him. So
Frankie Lindor, one of the few bright spots I got there in my lineup. But no, it was cool to see. So many of the guys that had worked their way through Montgomery in the big leagues and playing there in the Southeast for the Rays playing at Truist against the Braves this weekend.
I thought it was interesting that today after we talked about it a little bit yesterday with the ball game coming up Thursday night, some of the players with ties to the state of Alabama, AL.com today came out with their list of the top 22 major leaguers with ties to the state of Alabama. Some very impressive list. And some names that I had forgotten had any ties to the state of Alabama. I mean, obviously, Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, I mean, you start right there. Mays from the Birmingham area and Hank from Mobile, Henry Aaron from Mobile. But as you look on down the list, Early Wynn was a product of Geneva County High School. Down in southeast Alabama, Willie McCovey was another tremendous player from down in the Mobile area. Frank Thomas is on the list, even though he came out of Columbus because of his time at Auburn. And of course, he is still the SEC player, first SEC player installed in the Hall of Fame. Satchel Paige, I'd forgotten, is another Mobile native. So you'll look at the Mobile and let me go on. The next guy from Mobile is Billy Williams. Billy Williams, Satchel Paige, Hank Aaron, Willie McCovey, all from the Mobile area.
It's remarkable. Yeah. I mean that really is. I mean Michael Jordan played there for a little while too, but I feel like that's cheating. Right,
played some minor league baseball for the Barons.
A little cup of coffee for Jordan too, in Birmingham. Yeah,
they don't have him on here. Well, that's because they're looking at their professional careers.
Well, they're counting Frank. You count Frank Thomas' time at Auburn. You can count.
Yeah, but I'm saying they're looking at professional baseball players and then their time. I mean, it's like Michael is not going to be renowned for his professional baseball career. Some of the other names on their list: Craig Kimbrell, a native of Alabama, and then played junior college baseball in the state as well. Yep, from Lee High School in Huntsville, played at Wallace State in Hansville.
I think people would be surprised to learn. I mean, not learn. Like I don't know how if it's universally known. The Jackie Robinson's ties to the Atlanta area and the Southeast and Georgia. I mean, I think people know him as his time with the Dodgers,
right.
and breaking the color barrier for baseball. But I mean, this that's a Georgia native. They've got a prominent Jackie Robinson display inside Mercedes-Benz. He's on the mural. He's on the Atlanta mural there, and they have a display elsewhere in the stadium to him. But I mean, there's also some key. Some key figures from other parts of the Southeast. Although this event largely about Alabama, but I think also largely it's the South,
right?
You know, celebrating, the impact the South had on baseball over time and over history.
I think I saw where over 200 Hall of Famers played at Rickwood at some time of their career. Jake Peavy's on the list, the Mobile native who was an Auburn signee before he was drafted by the Padres.
Peavy was, wasn't he considering Auburn? Isn't that the story?
Oh, he signed with Auburn.
He's an Auburn signee.
Signed with Auburn, yep. Jimmy Key, who I got to see pitch against Auburn, was from North Alabama. Yeah, from Butler High School in Huntsville. Went to Clemson and then came in and handed it to Auburn pretty well. I remember a spring break where Clemson came in town and Jimmy Key was dominant. Some Josh Donaldson, obviously, on the list. Another mobile product. So I did not realize Jorge Posada played at Calhoun Community College before he was drafted by the Yankees.
And for that matter, I mean, with Frank Thomas making the list for his ties to the area, I would also point out, of course, Ryan Bliss, a recent Auburn major, recent Auburn player in the major leagues for the Seattle Mariners.
And that's right.
Especially in an era where
called up in the last month.
Yeah, I mean, it's and especially in with baseball, and trying to make this saluting the impact African Americans have had in Major League Baseball over time, and this being a tribute to the Negro Leagues and a history of Major League Baseball. I think it's really cool that Auburn had very recently had a product in Ryan Bliss, who was joined the list of prominent African Americans in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and of course Tim Hudson's on the list, and another guy that I'd forgotten about this, but Luis Gonzalez played at South Alabama, played his college baseball at South Alabama, and as a matter of fact. Dated a girl who.
Oh wait, what? You're not reading this part off the website.
I'm not. No, this is not off the website.
Yeah, that's not in his bio here.
No, as a matter of fact, he dated a girl who was the niece of a guy that used to work with.
So, oh, okay, yeah.
That she just called him. She didn't call him Luis. It was Lewis.
Oh, okay.
Lewis. He went by Lewis down in. Down in South Alabama.
Hero of the 0-1 World Series for the Diamondbacks, yep. Among other things.
And sweet left-handed swing.
Luis Gonzalez.
Yep. That's cool that is going on this Thursday. We'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Still got time for you to join us before we check in with Jake Crane at the bottom of the hour here on the Tuesday Drive.
Take your brand to the next level with Master Graphics, the local screen.
ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Yeah. Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls as we continue here on a Tuesday. I mean, we've talked quite a few different things. A lot of diamond talk today with softball and then baseball that we've talked about. Yesterday we talked with Brian Matthews.
You're fired up for your trip Thursday.
Yeah, I really am. Really am. Looking forward. Loved the opportunity to see. I mean, that's an opportunity to see a couple of major league teams. You could see. One of them, you get so either of them when they get to play in Atlanta, but get to see, a game there at Rickwood. I haven't been there in years. I'm really looking forward to seeing, how everything is. I know MLB, Major League Baseball, has, helped with the not just upkeep, but trying to bring Rickwood a little more back to life, and really looking forward to going up there and catching the Giants and the Cardinals. I was saying, yesterday Brian Matthews was here and we talked about the players that Auburn has added from the transfer portal. Today, Brian, there on his site at auburnsports.com, Wrote a little more in depth about players Auburn has added, the ones that have left through the portal. Did you see the news today? Chris Stanfield, LSU.
Wow.
I think that caught a few people by surprise. LSU needed a center fielder, but this one, Chris getting an opportunity to go to go down to Baton Rouge,
go to Red Stick,
play center field for those Tigers.
No, and that's for a draft eligible guy, and I think there was a hope that maybe he would stick in the pros this year, and Auburn wouldn't have to worry about seeing Chris Stanfield.
No, they will see him
on a conference rival, but instead that's not the way it works. And Chris Stanfield staying in college baseball, and it's a sign of what coach is up against, trying to win in the SEC. And I'm sure much of the focus, I have no idea what the offseason has been like for Butch, but I'm sure that much of the focus has been trying to get the money faucet going, right? Like, turn on the money faucet so you have something competitive to offer not just your players, and Auburn's done a good job of holding on to most of the players.
Hanging on to Ike Irish was huge. There's no question about that. And the fact that they've been able to bring in one of the bigger names
hold on.
In Mason Koch.
I would say I don't just assume that Cade Ballew is an Auburn guy because he's from here.
Oh, no, no.
Like, I think hanging on to Cade Ballew is a pretty significant thing. In an era where a true freshman could go wherever you want,
yep.
Do you think there'd be a market?
Absolutely, there would.
Cade Ballew's services after the way he was hitting the ball down the stretch. So, no, I absolutely agree on Ike Irish. He was maybe the guy I was most worried about. But I think holding on to Cade Ballew and convincing him to stick around is a significant development, too. And yeah, I mean, Chris Stanfield going to LSU stings. But Auburn's still trying to build the best roster they can as the offseason unfolds here in college baseball. And they've been able to pick up some guys they're excited about
too. Yeah, they've added seven players thus far, and looking for a left-handed pitcher, a guy that could compete as a starter, left-handed. I mean, after losing Tanner Bauman, I mean, they need somebody to be able to come in and give them significant innings as a lefty. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline sponsored by Sky Barn. Let's get to it. Go ahead. You're on the Drive.
Caller, hello.
Yeah, this is Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, is McMurray the first baseman? Is he out of eligibility?
No, he has a year if he decides to use it. I believe he's just taking his time, wanting to make sure he gets whatever evaluations or we see. I would guess that Butch Thompson would welcome Cooper back if things didn't go the way he would like in the MLB draft, which is coming up next month. Auburn would love to have a decision, you know, as soon as possible. But no, he has an extra year of eligibility, and I do feel that if he opts to play college ball next year, I'd be surprised if it was anywhere but Auburn.
Well, when is the draft?
Draft is just before the All-Star game, or leading right up into the All-Star game, the middle of July. So I think it's maybe the 13th to the 15th, or the 14th to the 16th, or something like that is the Major League draft.
One other thing. When is the trade deadline for the Major League Baseball?
July 31st.
Ah, good.
So there's still time. Yeah, still about a month and a half.
Yeah, some teams that are on the cliff right now got to decide if they want to buy and add and make a push, or if they want to if their performance has been something of a mirage right now and they want to focus on next season and start to sell. I think, you know, maybe the picture will be more clear as to who's really a contender and who should maybe focus on next season as we get a little bit closer to the deadline.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Jerry.
You're right. A lot of teams in the National League, I'd say everybody in the National League except the Rockies and the Marlins, feel like they're in it right now, and that list could grow.
Those are the only two teams that are more than is this insane? More than two games out of the wild card spot right now. Every other team in the National League, other than the Marlins and Rockies, is either in playoff position or within a couple of games of the wild card, last wild card spot.
Yeah, things are extremely
that's crazy.
Things are extremely bunched up, especially when you get beyond Philadelphia and to an extent L.A. and then you know you get into Milwaukee. I mean Milwaukee and Atlanta. After that, and things get a little bit closer. But it's no, you're right. There are a lot of teams that could feel like they're in it right now, or maybe a player away from being in, including everybody in the Central and practically everyone in the West and the East. Now teams could fall closer to the bottom of their respective divisions, and then maybe it becomes easier to decide, okay, well, let's trade away some veterans. Let's start restocking for 2025. But you don't want to do that when you feel like you might be a good week or two away from making some real making up some real ground in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, in the meanwhile, in the American League, a lot of teams are starting to slide, and you've already got the Angels, the A's, and the White Sox. The White Sox are just terrible.
How far back are they?
They are 27 games behind Cleveland, and they're 21.5 games out of the last wild card spot. 21.5 games out of the last wild card
Bill,
spot.
Bill, it's not.
They are 19-54.
It's not July 4th yet. And you're 27 games out of first
place.
You're
35 games under 500 in the middle of June.
Yeah, that's. I mean, they should pay people to go to those games. Like they should not be charging. They should not be charging admission.
Bill Vec couldn't come up with good enough ideas. I mean, you know.
Just have
it's have another disco demolition.
Every night it's White Sox demolition night at the ballpark right now because this is.
Oh man,
they are 12-23 at home, 7-31 on the road this year.
That's a good
Major
football.
League Baseball.
You know, that's a bad football score. 7-31.
Oh man,
The thing is, they've got a few guys now. They've got a couple of players that people would really like to have.
Yeah, I just think a couple of these teams should be thinking fire sale, and I mean the obvious ones are you know probably Chicago, the Angels,
Rockies,
the Rays don't have enough you know to give folks right now. Unfortunately, maybe Eflin would spark some interest from a team looking to add to the staff, although he's had a down season from where he was last year. But no, I think the Marlins and the Rockies now, depending on what they want to sell, and then we'll see if any National League teams add to that list.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side, so stick with us.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we will head now to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our friend Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how's it going today?
Man, I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Doing all right, Jake. Great to hear from you.
As usual, always love coming on, my friends.
All right, Jake, so this is a, you know, it's an odd time for, you know, I mean, it feels like it's preview season. Right for college football. I know it's magazine season, optimism season, stuff like that. And this is it's a unique year, Jake, because I feel like whether it's Texas or Oklahoma, even if they were just doing one of the two changes, even if it was just Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC and the Big 12 or the Pac-12 splitting apart the way it has, or if it was just the expansion of the playoff to 12 teams. Either one of those would be pretty seismic changes in college football. To introduce both of those things in the same year, this season has the potential to be the bananas, as Gwen Stefani would sing.
Yeah, B-A-N-A-N-A-S, for sure. I mean, you look at the mega shifts that we're seeing, and look, we've had the transfer portal before this, obviously NIL. But it seems like these two changes, especially with it being Texas and Oklahoma, and really all the conference realignment. I mean, you look at Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA going to the Big Ten. I mean, even, you know, what we have with SMU and Cal and Stanford going to the ACC, it's a brand new landscape in college football. Not only that, it's a brand new landscape in the postseason, which makes the regular season, in my opinion, it actually adds more to the end of it because more teams are going to be eligible to make the true postseason. So, I mean, Dan, at this point, there's projections and predictions that you've never had to make because we're in a situation that we've never been in before.
Yeah, a lot of people, Jake, would say, well, it takes away from the regular season. But no, it's going to mean that that if you lose a game or even two games early, if you really play well, you can still turn it around and have a chance to make the playoffs. So you shouldn't have fan bases or teams that are just ready to pack it in and go, well, the season's over, just because you might have some early season problems.
No, without a doubt. I mean, now those games at the end, even if it's between, not even between two teams that are eligible, just, that Tennessee-Kentucky game now takes on a whole new meaning other than just good bowl position. And then, Bill, I mean, even look at the beginning of the year. You know, now you can eat a loss and still have a chance.
Is there a team, and I know it's, I mean, this is a tougher year to project, but, it feels like Georgia and Texas go into the season as fairly consensus top five. I would expect them to be the preseason favorites to play in the SEC championship game. I'm guessing Texas will get the nod, or I'm guessing Georgia will get the nod over Texas, but I'm thinking those are your top two in the SEC. Beyond those two, is there a team you've got a pretty good feeling about as a championship contender, playoff contender, a team that could have a hot season, Jake?
Well, it's funny, back to our original point, you really don't have to be a championship contender to maybe sneak in the playoff if you're the right 9-3. But, when I look at Ole Miss and Missouri, two teams that were very similar last year in what they did, you look at their schedules, Ole Miss is in the best position that they've been in, God, since I can remember, even keeping track of Ole Miss, to be able to not only win an SEC championship, but to be able to actually win a national championship, as crazy as that sounds. But, outside of that, I think Tennessee, if Nico can kind of get through some mistakes and they still win early, I think they have a chance. Outside of that, Oklahoma, I think Brent Venables is building that team the right way. The defense is a lot better than what it's been in the past. But they got a new quarterback in Jackson Arnold that's going to go through some ups and downs. And, they don't run a system like Tennessee runs. And I don't think that they're, going to have the same kind of malleability when it comes to finding other ways to win as Tennessee will. So give me Ole Miss, give me Missouri, Tennessee maybe a little bit, but outside of that, I don't think there's really anybody else that has a chance to take a big bite out of the league. I hope Auburn, if Peyton Thorne can play at a level that maybe some of us aren't anticipating with the periphery pieces that Auburn's added, maybe you can look at Auburn sneaking up. But and then Alabama, of course, when you have that much talent, at the end of the day, they're always going to be a factor. So, yeah, Georgia and Texas, but Ole Miss, Missouri, Bama, and maybe even Tennessee, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, here's a crazy question now. I mean, it's like we haven't even gotten to the 12-team playoff, but there's already talk about expanding it more. What do you think about that, and where would you like it to go to? I mean, if it's going to expand, how much do you want to expand? I've heard some people say, well, let's go ahead and go to 32. That just blows my mind. But, I mean, I look at and see the FCS playoffs right now are 24.
Yeah, well, I thought 8 was the perfect number. And obviously when they're going to add to the 12, my biggest thing is when you have to start eliminating regular season games, because all we've heard is player safety, player safety, player safety. Well, you can't add games to the postseason and then add games or keep the same amount of games being 12 now that we have in the regular season. I think once you get to 16, when you factor in the bye weeks, we're going to have to start talking about maybe going back to 11 regular season games, and I don't want to see that. So I think anything past 12 is too much, but I would put my hard cap at 16, Bill.
Yeah, I just
too.
Think
I'm right with you there.
I just think the smaller boat club is going to – we're going to lose this war. Like, folks who want to keep the playoff at – if you wanted to keep it at 2 or if you wanted to keep
it
at 4 or 12, the barn door feels open here.
Yep.
And I don't know where it lands, but I feel like we're going to, if anything, they're going to grow it to a point where you feel like, oh, it's gotten too big. So if that's 24 or if that's 32, I would brace for that.
we're having to beg them not to go to 84 games for the NCAA basketball tournament.
Right.
Like, it's, they're not going to look at the amount of money that gets made and be like, oh, we're making too much money, we should play less playoff games. That's not how it's going to work. But once you get past that 16 team, then I can already hear them saying, well, you know, we went so long playing 11 regular season games, so let's just take it back down to 11 and let's go to a 24 team postseason. I really hope that doesn't happen.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, you've got all the bowl games that ESPN wants to keep because they want the inventory, and they know, you know, that gamblers are watching those games. But the bowl games, you talk about meaningless now, except for a team that has just been terrible, and finally, you know, becomes eligible to get into a bowl game. But, I mean, what is the point of having all these extra bowl games while you're expanding the playoffs more and more?
No, and you're going to see a lot of bowl games get grandfathered into these playoff games, right?
They better be.
Playoff games. They will. It's. I mean, heck, we're to the point now where conferences are selling their naming rights, so I wouldn't put anything past them, especially when it comes to bowl games. But I'm going to be, you know, Bill, honestly, right now, I mean, even going back to Auburn's bowl game against Maryland, I mean, that was basically like a tryout. I mean, when you look at what's happened to the bowl games outside of, like you said, teams that have you know, rose like a phoenix and finally made a bowl, or the service academies, I mean, nobody really cares anymore. It's tough for me to bet bowl games because half the guys aren't playing, and the guys that are playing, it's, you know, almost
you
like
don't know if they care. That's right.
Butter, like, it just is what it is now.
No, and I think that the emphasis that existed for a long time on achieving bowl eligibility, like, that feels like it's going to go by the wayside now, because if you win seven or six or five, I feel like you're going to get lumped into the same crowd of non-playoff teams.
Well, yeah, especially when you look at some of the expectations of these places that go 7-5. I mean, again, not everybody is just happy with bowl eligibility. I mean, there's going to be a lot of disappointment to the fact of, oh, man, there's an expanded playoff and we still can't get in it now. So it's so brand new. Like, I'm just going to have to see it play out to be able to even comment on it. I can give you projections and say I think this is going to happen or it's going to go this way. But, I mean, heck, by the time we get done with this thing, everybody may make the postseason. Who knows?
And to your point, with 12 teams making it, they're going to be an awful lot more teams. I feel that their fan bases are going to feel like, all right, look, all the money that's sinking into this and 12 teams are making it, If we're not making it, even if you've been a team that has been, you know, around a 500 team that makes bowl games, say, half the time, your fan base is going to be feeling like, hey, you ought to step it up and win an extra ball game or two and be in contention for the playoffs, maybe make the seat even hotter for some coaches.
No, it's funny. There'll be some coaches that get saved because they can say, hey, we made the playoff, even if we're a 10 or 11 seed, as opposed to saying, hey, guys, you know, we played in a pretty decent bowl game, even though it wasn't a New Year's Six. And then you're going to have others that say, wait a minute, we're Penn State. Why aren't we one of the top 12 teams at the end of the year when we have all these advantages? So as much as it may help a couple coaches, there's going to be a lot of coaches that ADs and fan bases are saying, hey, I don't understand why we can't even get – we couldn't get into the 4 or we couldn't get into the 2. Why can't we get into the 12?
Jake, did we – I'm trying to remember, pivoting to basketball a little bit, talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Did we get to talk to you after the Duke game was announced, or is that something that I don't know if we've talked to you about the announcement that the SEC-ACC lineup includes a pretty significant matchup between Auburn and Duke?
No, you know, I think it got announced right after we talked last week, if I'm not mistaken. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, it's you want to win every game. I hope Auburn goes in there and beats Duke, but that's not a bad thing to put on the resume. It's almost kind of a house money situation. And you can say the same thing with Alabama going to play North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So I welcome it. I think it's good. It gives you a chance to – and listen, there's not going to be a better-built Auburn team to go into Cameron Indoor and play. I mean, we got more seniors than a nursing home.
Yeah, what a tremendous tribute it is to the job Bruce Pearl has done and the Auburn's recognition being able to do that. One of the things we were saying, though, is, man, it's a shame. It would be an even – greater tribute if that game were to have been able to be played at Auburn. But still, that's a huge tip of the hat, because the first thing you would expect would be, well, Kentucky's going to be involved. And if not Kentucky, then Arkansas or Florida. But no, it's Auburn and Alabama that are making the trip up to the state of North Carolina.
No, look, it's the golden era of basketball in the state of Alabama. And, I mean, you look at UAB, too. I mean, you look at just all across the state how basketball has come this far of a way. And if you think about it, not only is it a compliment that, hey, we're going to match you guys up against Duke, regardless of where it is, I actually think Auburn has a shot to win that game. I never thought I could have lived to be 300 years old, and I never thought I would ever say that about Auburn basketball.
Yeah, I think that adds the excitement, because if Auburn were projected as a bottom two or bottom four team in the SEC this year, yes, it would be exciting, the news that Auburn's going to go play Duke, a preseason top 10 Duke team, in the SEC-ACC Challenge. But I don't know if the expectations would be there for even a competitive game, let alone the possibility of an upset. But, I mean, as it stands now, Auburn's going in as one of the top two teams in the SEC, likely a top 10 preseason team nationally. And it makes sense. Everyone's talking about the Auburn side of this. I think for John Shire, it makes sense when you've got freshman front court. You've got two of the top freshmen, incoming freshmen in college basketball in Flagg and Malawach. It would have been cool for Cooper Flagg to stay home and play at Maine, be a black bear. But I understand why the projected top pick in next year's draft is instead going to play at Duke. But when you've got two freshmen coming in like Flagg and Malawach, who need to be as important as Duke expects them to be, give them a chance against Jani Broom and Chaney Johnson and Dylan Cardwell and the one of the better veteran front courts in all of college basketball. That matchup plays. It's crazy to say, Jake, that Duke will benefit from having played Auburn in the non-conference before ACC play gets going this basketball season.
That sounds like bizarro world.
But it's absolutely true.
It's straight out of a Black Mirror episode, Dan, to be honest with you. I mean, and for Cooper Flagg, why would I want to go play at a place where they have volleyball lines on the court when I'm the number one prospect overall and my parents have to work in the concession stand? I guarantee you when that got announced, John Shire didn't look at that and go, oh, good, we're playing Auburn. He knows at the end of the day that is probably one of the toughest draws that they could have gotten. But from an Auburn standpoint, if you find a way to go in there and win that game, and we talked about how important seeding was and how important seeding is in the NCAA tournament, that's one of those wins that can get you a one seed if you handle your business outside of it.
Jake Crane of Crane & Company with us as he is each Tuesday afternoon. Hey, I saw your post the other day. Congrats, and thought I'd pass along that Matt got us tickets to see the Cards and Giants at Rickwood on Thursday night. So that's going to be fun.
Oh man,
yeah.
Well, look, first off, it's crazy. I remember just as a little kid running around and hanging out with Matt, and now we're having a child of our own. I appreciate your kind words. I just hope the baby looks like my wife, not me.
Oh,
but
man.
But us Cranes, Bill, you look at a picture of my dad, we tend to, the father gets a lot of the look.
Yeah, the resemblances do continue through generations.
Some of those genes are pretty dumb.
Yeah, no kidding. Jake,
they are. Yeah, they are.
Always great spending a little time with you. Let everybody know about Crane & Company, what you got coming up.
Definitely, man. Always love chopping it up with you guys. Ready to get football season here. Keep an eye on Juju Lewis. Just keep an eye on him. I'm hearing some good things. But, yeah, look, you love talking Auburn, college football, college basketball. We have live calls, a live chat, 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Central. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Daily Wire, all that stuff. It's Crane & Company. Come hang out. If you can't catch us live, it stays on there till the meteors hit or the aliens come and blow us up. So, come hang out with us.
Sounds good, Jake. Thanks again, man. Have a great week.
All right. Y'all be good.
Jake Crane joining us as he does Tuesdays at 5:30. We really appreciate him spending some time with us. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
What's up, guys?